Welcome back to the Wake Up Zone, 104.5 The Zone with Mark Howard and Blaine Bishop. Morgan Alexander, producer, I'm Kevin Ingram. Let's head to Knoxville from VolQuest.com, one of our favorites. Brent Hubbs, what's going on this morning?
How much, guys? How are y'all?
Not a lot. What's going on with the coordinator search? Anything new there? And what about Hugh Freeze?
I don't think it doesn't sound like Hugh Freeze is going to end up at Tennessee. You know, nobody on the Freeze side of things, nobody on the Tennessee side of things will tell me that it's completely dead. But it doesn't appear like it's going in that direction. And so now the question becomes, you know, where is Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer and the powers that be going in their offensive coaching, offensive coordinator search? Particularly, where's Jeremy Pruitt going with his search? And I don't know the answer to that right now, to be honest with you. I don't think Chip Lindsey was ever a realistic candidate, even though his name was floated out there. And a lot of people that you talk to were telling me, you know, it's, you know, Freeze and Lindsey. I don't think Lindsey was ever a guy that Jeremy Pruitt was gonna really go after and really pursue. Dan Enos at Alabama, doesn't seem like that name is growing any kind of in any kind of positive way towards Tennessee. So I don't know that that's a guy that Jeremy Pruitt has a whole lot of interest in. So the question everybody wants to know this morning is, who does he have interest in? And that's what we're all trying to figure out right now.
And I guess, what is the timeline too, and how does it relate to the early signing period?
Well, you know, from an early signing period standpoint, I don't know that it has huge ramifications if you don't have somebody in place right now. I mean, the only way this thing, in my opinion, goes past the early signing period is if you are prioritizing an NFL guy as one of your, you know, as one of your priorities, a guy that you want to hire as an NFL guy. Other than that, I do think you can get this thing done and should get this thing. I pray that you get this thing done in the next, you know, week to 10 days if you're not sitting there waiting on an NFL guy. And right now we're not hearing a lot of NFL names. But frankly, right now, I'm not hearing a ton of names in general. I mean, I threw out a couple of names of guys who, one, you know, Larry Fedora is looking for a job. Okay, but I don't have anybody at Tennessee telling me that Jeremy Pruitt has any interest in Fedora. Fedora does not leave North Carolina with a great rapport with the high school coaches and everybody in North Carolina. So would that be a detriment to recruiting in that state, which Tennessee has made a priority? Could be. I don't know that Fedora is a fit for Pruitt. I know he's unemployed. He's not going to be a head coach and would like to have a job somewhere. The offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, his name has popped up, you know, loosely with the Auburn job. Is he looking around? If that's the case, would Tennessee go down that road? Would Jeremy Pruitt be interested in talking to him? Maybe. Don't know that. Don't have anybody telling me that. But that's a guy who seems to be getting his name out there as it relates to maybe having some interest in some other jobs. And certainly the guy at NC State, Drinkwitz, is a name that we've heard a little bit as well. Maybe that's a guy that ends up being on the radar screen. That's what we're all trying to figure out this morning.
You know, as far as the signing period that's coming up, what's going on with recruiting? How good could this group be that they put together in this early time?
Well, I think it could be solid. I think it could be really good. I think it depends on how they finish here the next couple of weeks. I mean, this is a class that's hovering around the top 10, top 15 in there. It's got some really important parts in it. You know, they've got a couple of key visitors coming in the next couple of weeks. One of those is Owen Pepo, who's a linebacker from down in Grayson, Georgia. And Tennessee has a commitment from Wanya Morris. Now, Pepo continues to be committed to Auburn, but he and his family are coming up for a visit this weekend. And I think it's really important. It's a really important visit because I think that's a guy Tennessee could flip, not saying they would, think they could flip him. Eric Gray is the all-purpose back from out in West Tennessee, who is a three-time Mr. Football winner that's decommitted from Michigan. He's open right now to schools, and I think Tennessee has put themselves in a pretty solid spot with him right now. Could he be affected by the offensive coordinator search? I don't know, maybe. But I think Jeremy Pruitt and his staff have done a good job recruiting him, and I think for the last 10 days or so, Tennessee has appeared to be the school with more momentum than anybody else with Eric Gray right now.
Our guest is Brent Hubbs for VolQuest.com, talking Tennessee.
Hey, Brent, would you be surprised if Coach Pruitt just stayed in-house and hired somebody in there? Because I think it's all about now philosophy and what he wants to do as far as his scheme. And because I don't understand what would have been the holdup with some of these other coaches. So obviously then there's some hiccup there. So would you be shocked if that happened at all?
Right now, Blaine, I would be surprised if that's the direction he went. I really would. I don't get the sense. I don't get the feeling that promoting from within is the direction he's had in his mind to go. Again, you know, searches are fluid. You know, things change all the time. He can get out there and talk to some guys and feel like he doesn't find anybody that fits him, and maybe he thinks somebody on his staff ultimately ends up being the better fit. But I don't believe he's gone into this search with the idea of, hey, there's a guy on my staff I really think is ready right now, and that's a guy I really want to consider. I just haven't got that feeling. But again, these things are day-to-day and hour-by-hour. But right now, I would be surprised if you promoted within, to answer your question.
Yeah, I know you said Larry Fedora. I mean, give us some names that nobody's talking about as an up-and-comer that you've heard in the grapevines, I guess. Not necessarily with Tennessee's job, but that is an up-and-coming offensive coordinator.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting question, because is up-and-comer the right answer for Tennessee?
Right.
You know, does Jeremy Pruitt need more of a seasoned guy, a veteran guy, because Jeremy Pruitt's just finishing his first year as a coach? Does he need a guy who's got a little more experience on that side of the ball to where, you know, he's got complete trust in, and that guy goes and runs his business, you know?
When I say up-and-comer, I mean, again, a name that a lot of people wouldn't know, but he's been stable and been an offensive coordinator.
Well, I just mentioned Ulrich's, or I can't pronounce his name the right way. The guy at Oklahoma State. I think he's been with Gundy 7 years. Been successful there. Now you get back to the philosophy question, Blaine, that you asked, which is a good one. Is an offensive coordinator in the Big 12? What's his learning curve jumping into the SEC? I don't mean to knock the Big 12, but they're playing a lot closer to 7-on-7 football in that conference than you are in the SEC. There's a different mindset that you have to have, I think, as a play caller in the SEC, where you got to understand sometimes 3 or 4 yards is a good play, okay? Whereas in the Big 12, that's perceived as a bad play because you're averaging about 9 or 10 yards a play in that conference in a lot of cases. So, what you know, that's something that if I'm Jeremy Pruitt and say I talk to him, I would have questions about whether or not his philosophy is adaptable to the way you play football in the Southeastern Conference. You know, the one thing we've seen, it's interesting, in the SEC, defensive coordinator, defensive-minded guys have become head coaches. That's kind of been the norm when you look around. I mean, Will Muschamp's a defensive guy. Pruitt's a defensive guy. We all know about Saban, Kirby Smart, Ed Orgeron. These are all, Mark Stoops, they're defensive guys. You look in other conferences, it's the offensive play caller guys who are getting head jobs. Josh Heupel, Lincoln Riley. So how many great coordinators or young coordinators are floating around out there that aren't going to be head coaches, that aren't getting head coaching opportunities? In the SEC, you would say there's probably more of those guys because it's a defensive-minded league, but you can't make that statement about the Pac-12. You can't make that statement about the Big 12. And so the question is, how deep is the pool of possibilities?
Wow.
For big-time offensive coordinators out there. I'm not saying there's not. I mean, let's look at Kendall Briles, okay? Kendall Briles makes about $700,000 a year, so financially you can go get him. He's thought to be a young up-and-comer. But this is a critical hire if you're Jeremy Pruitt. Is he ready for this job? Charlie Weiss Jr. just finished his first year playing as a play caller for Lane Kiffin. Thought to be a young guru. But is he ready for this job? Because if you're Jeremy Pruitt, you got a mulligan on Tyson Helton, okay? He didn't work. He's gone after a year. You're not paying him $2.4 million to go away, so you get a mulligan. But you can't blunder the mulligan. You got to get it right this time. This is a very critical hire for Jeremy Pruitt.
Wow. Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com, critical guest for us every week right here on the Wake Up Zone. 8:28 the time. Stay with us. More with Brent coming up. Word about Open Door. You've been thinking about selling that house. You know what? It's time to move. You've been thinking about it for a while. You want to downsize or maybe buy something bigger, or maybe you want to move closer to home or your job or your family, whatever. Open Door can help you with that. Open Door is a new inventive way to sell your house. It eliminates the stress and hassle that goes along with putting your house on the market. Open Door has served 20,000 customers in 11 cities. They're still going strong. You can sell them directly to Open Door and skip all the hassle that goes with selling your house. You know what I'm talking about if you've ever been through this process. You don't have to have it staged and ready to go. You don't have to have it cleaned up or do a bunch of, you know, repairs and things like that take a long time and spend a lot of money. You just contact Open Door. Go to opendoor.com and get all the info. They've helped people avoid combined over 50,000 home showings. A faster, streamlined process. Get a free offer on your home within 48 hours, and it saves you hours and hours of prep work. It's also transparent. A competitive, fair market offer on your home is headed your way. Using trusted local data, you can sell your house without ever putting it on the market and close on your own timeline as quickly as 10 days, as long as 60 days. Visit opendoor.com today and get a free request or to request a free offer on your home. Again, the website, go check it out, opendoor.com. 8:35 the time, 104.5 the zone. We continue our Wednesday morning chat with our friend from VolQuest.com, Brent Hubbs.
Brent, we all surmise, and you were alluding to, why Pruitt, is getting a mulligan here, and it was pretty evident that he and Tyson Helton butted heads, even if they didn't openly admit it. Do you think what is hampering this search somewhat is that some might perceive that Pruitt is tough to work with?
No, I mean I don't think the narrative on Jeremy Pruitt's probably any different than it was 6 months ago. I think if you ask anybody coming out of spring practice, the idea is that Pruitt's very demanding. He can be challenging at times. He comes from that school. I mean, we watched Kirby Smart scream into a headset at Jim Chaney multiple times a game at Georgia. We see Nick Saban dressing down people on the sideline. I think that's kind of the culture that Jeremy Pruitt has been in, and I think you know that when you hire Jeremy Pruitt. I think you know that when you interview for a job with Jeremy Pruitt. I don't think somebody is out there going, I'm not going to go to work for Jeremy Pruitt because he's hard to deal with or he's difficult or whatever. I don't think that's the case. Not when you're paying the kind of money Tennessee's paying out there and the confidence that these coaches have. He doesn't have a sled load of guys on his staff bolting, because it's a miserable experience and nobody wants to be here. So, no, I don't think that there's a perception out there that Jeremy's any more difficult to work with than any other demanding head coach is out there.
And we encourage, of course, Vols fans, football fans, to give VolQuest a chance. It's really terrific with the way that they cover Tennessee and, of course, other elements of the school in terms of athletics and basketball and all that. But Brent, one of the other things you guys touched on that I thought was interesting was the Philip Fulmer area of self-scouting, which I'm sure probably occurs throughout the season where he has sit-downs, Pruitt does, with Philip Fulmer and sort of bounce things off of him, and Fulmer, being a copious note-taker. And you wonder just, in terms of, that interaction, what Pruitt takes away from that.
Well, I think if you're Jeremy Pruitt, what's the saying in football, Blaine, that you make your greatest growth from game one to game two as a football team? I think that's what a lot of coaches out there say and believe. I think as a head coach, a first-year head coach, some of your greatest growth is from year one to year two. That doesn't mean you stop growing, because if you stop growing after year two, you're not going to be a very long-term successful football coach, because you've always got to grow, adapt, and change as a football coach. But having gone through everything for the, quote, first time as a head coach, the way Jeremy Pruitt has, I think this is a critical month, A, to get the OC hire done, to get the early signing day and get, 20 guys signed to get your class basically done. But then you're going to have that time around Christmas and the dead period where you can't be out on the road and you don't have a bowl game. That's when, if you're Jeremy Pruitt, with the help of Philip Fulmer, you know, you've got to really do a great job of self-scouting this past season. What went right? What were you not sure about? What could you have handled better? What should you have handled better? What did you need to look at handling better? And that's everything from, did you hit too much the last month of the season? Were you a tired football team in November and ran out of gas the last couple of weeks? Did you develop at individual positions the way that you needed to? Did you focus enough on individual development at times versus, you know, scheming and game planning all the time? You know, how was your organization in terms of managing recruiting during season and managing coaching the football team and developing the football team? Because recruiting as a head coach is very different than recruiting as an assistant coach. I think all of those, and there's thousands of more things like that. But that, after year one in particular, you have to do a really good job of self-scouting and listen to other people's opinions that you trust on what the first year looked like versus what it needs to look like moving forward. And I think that's why December is such a critical month for, and look, it doesn't mean Jeremy Pruitt's in a hot seat. No, don't take it that way. But for growth and development as a coach, you've got to use this month the right way and become a better football coach this month, even though you're not coaching a practice or anything like that.
Hey, on a basketball note, with Turner out, man, how long will he be out at the guard position, and how much does that affect the rotation and everything else with the team?
Well, they've played, obviously, a lot of games without him throughout the preseason already. So the rotation-wise, you know, they've got a handle on that right now. I don't know. I don't know that he's going to play Sunday against Gonzaga. I think that's kind of up in the air. Depends on what the soreness is on the shoulder, and depends on how much the shoulder continues to affect the way he plays. The one thing about Lamonte Turner is a talented basketball player. One thing that makes Lamonte Turner a better basketball player than maybe even his talent is the guy has unbelievable confidence in himself. He's not afraid of a big shot in a key, critical moment. He's never been afraid to take it. If he's struggling and he doesn't have the confidence to play with that kind of belief in himself, then you got to get him right. Wow. And if that means you set him for a long period of time, then you set him for a while. You need him in January, February, March much more than you need him in December, okay? So whatever you've got to do to get him where he's going in the right direction and not having a setback and not battling, you know, confidence and a shot that's off, whatever, if you need to shut him down, shut him down. Just do whatever you got to do to get him right for conference play and postseason play. Because, again, we've talked about it. The judgment of this basketball team is not going to come whether or not they beat Gonzaga on Sunday. It's going to come what weekend are they playing in the month of March. Are they a two-weekend basketball team in the NCAA tournament? Are they a three-weekend basketball team in the tournament or a one-weekend basketball team in the tournament? That's where the judgment comes from this basketball team.
But Brent, how much is this a chance to get some judgment in your favor based on what they do against Gonzaga? You know, given especially the way they went up there and played against Louisville and Kansas in that tournament up in Brooklyn.
Well, it's a great opportunity. There's no question about that. You know, obviously, if you win the game, it gives you great exposure and it cements yourself to everybody of how good of a basketball team you really are. If you play well in the game and lose, I mean, Tennessee did not lose any popularity. I don't know. That's not the right word. But nobody said Tennessee doesn't belong after the overtime loss to Kansas. In fact, Tennessee, most people said, well, Tennessee's one of the best teams in the country because they just went toe-to-toe with one of the four best teams in the country, a team that many people think could be in the Final Four. So I think, you know, go play this game. It's a tournament-style game. I think you can help yourself greatly. Internally and externally continue to drive the idea, which is a reality, that this is one of the best teams in the country. So this is a big opportunity game, but if you lose it, it's not a season loss. I mean, sure, you know, you're not out of the playoffs because you lost a game in December. And that's a mindset that not everybody grasps all the time. But this is a tournament style game. I'd be curious to see how Tennessee learned from the Kansas experience and applies it to this game against Gonzaga. Are they tight early? I thought they were against Kansas. Do they handle the last 4 minutes possession by possession down the stretch against Gonzaga better than they did against Kansas? Those are areas of growth I think you're looking for this team this weekend.
Brent, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. From VolQuest.com, Brent Hubbs, every Wednesday morning right here on 104.5 The Zone. Coming up next, Vanderbilt gets ready for Baylor, how Coach Derek Mason's season, and who won't be playing for the Bears in the bowl game. That's coming up in a moment. First, over the plane, and a word about Gary Ashton.
Yes, I've been telling about Gary Ashton and his team at Remax Advantage for a while now. They are Tennessee's number one real estate team. One of the reasons why they're Tennessee's number one real estate team is because of innovations like reverse search real estate. What is reverse search real estate, you ask? It's a way of finding out all the buyers in Nashville looking for a home just like yours before you put it on the market. The technology works by leveraging the biggest database on Nashville real estate. You type in your address and how much you want to sell for, and boom, you can see all the buyers looking for your kind of home. That's why they say don't sell without the intel. Plus, your listings come up first on their site. That's the Ashton advantage. So give Gary Ashton's team a call today at 615, of course, 301-1650, or visit them online at GaryAshton.com. And if you call today, Gary will donate $50 to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital for every listing appointment he goes on. So 301-1650 or online at GaryAshton.com.